Hello everyone and welcome back to PSC Photography, the podcast where we talk about imaging, images, photographs, videos, whatever image we fancy talking about, since its amalgamation recently with all the other groups to do with imaging, including photos from phones. So watch out for that one as we head into the show. Today's show is 21. It's Thursday, the 21st of May. 21 on the 21st. And our theme this evening is friction, constraints, and obstacles to photography, which was nicely chosen by Charlie. Hello, Charlie, Ian, and Chris.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Hello. Everyone all right? Well, one of you's not all right. Shall we have the tale of woe?
I have a broken foot and a broken phone, so I'm just waiting for the third thing to come along.
How have you broken your foot?
It was pure stupidity of doing a tourist park run off-road. There was lots of dips. I went over on it. Halfway through, had to finish it, as you do. And then A&E on Sunday, and apparently 6 weeks to recover in a boot, but I need to be ready in 2.5 weeks. So that's my challenge for the next couple of weeks, is getting out this boot and being able to walk.
There's a picture of the boot in the shared album, everyone, if you care to look. There's also a picture of the back of your lovely-looking phone, which is no longer lovely-looking. Was it insured?
No. I did post it on. So I had the lovely, and I must confess, for 2 days of using it, the Oppo Find X9 Ultra is very nice. It's great to take photos with. But it was in my back pocket. I sat on it, and apparently that shattered the glass. And I've had various conversations with Oppo to no avail. And now I'm currently waiting for the parts to come in for it to be repaired.
And you're going to have to pay for it?
Yep.
Do you know how much?
Yes. So they've said that it's £200 because they said the camera was damaged, as well as the back glass. I'm not 100% convinced the camera was actually damaged, but I'm not a phone engineer, so.
Underneath that shattered bit, that's one of the lenses, isn't it? Underneath that?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so I suppose it could be.
That's less than I thought it was going to be, £200. If that was an iPhone, it would be sort of 800, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I've moaned at Oppo. I actually bought it through mobiles.co.uk because it was £300 cheaper than buying it outright. And you still got all the pre-order gifts. But I think there's probably karma coming back to me, or my fat bottom that caused it. But again, if anyone's thinking of buying one of these, I would definitely get a lens protector for it.
I'm not sure.
Ian, can you tell me, does the camera, when you put it down flat, the Ultra 9, does it wobble on the table?
From memory of 2 days of use, no, I don't think it does. I mean, it is really good in the hand. Your finger at the back fits very much snug underneath it. I think it is. I had the X9 Normal, the X9 Pro. And really loved it, and this is everything that had, really.
It is centralised, the island, isn't it? It shouldn't wobble, yeah. Really. Yeah.
No, but it is a real chunky monkey. It is, going back to my Honor Magic 8 Pro, this is like, the 8 Pro feels like an iPhone mini compared to what that was, so it is quite hefty, but again, it is a pleasure to use, but maybe fragile.
And in terms of your 6 weeks off your feet, as it were, Ian, is that going to interfere with your travel plans?
Yes.
Right.
I'm supposed to be in Monaco. I'm leaving for Monaco Tuesday week. So, I've only just started walking on the boot with it, but obviously not very far. But the nature of shooting a race weekend, you do an awful lot of steps. So I'm just trying to take it as easy as possible. It is what it is.
I'm going
no matter what, so...
You're going to go anyway, yeah, hang it.
Yeah.
You get yourself a wheelchair or something.
Well, I think Chris mentioned a mobility scooter with a Ferrari logo on the front would be cool, so...
We mustn't take the piss. It's very sad for you, but I always said that exercise was no good for people, and you proved it, I think, running around the place. It wouldn't have happened if you hadn't have been exercising. Joe's joined us. He's late on parade, but he's here. How are you doing, Joe?
Yeah, I'm late, but still great. I'm not too late, bad, thank you.
Good. And yes, Joe had a late customer, as I was saying earlier. So he's now with us, which is cool. And I was just saying that the title of the show. But before we get to the rest of the theme bits, we're just I just thought I'd let you know that I decided unilaterally that I thought that the photo of the month competition, now that we've reshuffled all of what we're doing, I think that the photo of the month competition in PSC photos is probably more appropriate here. We can still do, Joe and I can still do picture of the week and that sort of thing over in PSC if we want to, but it kind of fits better here, I think. So I thought we would just go head into that. Do you agree, Joe?
Yeah, no, I can see where that makes sense. And I would be interested to hear what these chaps would say, actually. So, yeah, makes sense.
It gets some more informed opinions about the winners, particularly the apex of the stuff going on. Phoneshowchat.uk is our website these days for PSC photography as well, and there's a link there to the shared album. Everything we're going to talk about tonight, well, most of it is going to be in the shared album, so do head across there and follow along if you would like to. Now, when I said to Chris earlier we were going to do this photo of the month thing here in the PSC photos group, he said, hang on a minute, you didn't even mention my winner for the March competition and now you're jumping to April's, and that's not fair, he said. So we're going to start by having a look at his photograph, which did win the photograph of the month for March 2026, which was Taking in the View, as he's called it, with an Apple iPhone 13 mini, which you hate, Chris.
I don't know, the phone or the photo?
I'm not sure. I thought you meant the photo.
I would say I hate the photo, but I don't concentrate on phone photos so much these days, and the pictures I got with my camera, I was really, really happy with. We spoke about one of them last time or the time before.
Uh-huh.
But when I'm sort of out taking pictures of the camera, I do sort of just chuck a quick phone one in there just for fun, you know, just to capture it on the phone and put it in the group. And this was the one I got. So it wasn't particularly a lot of intent in the composition. It was just literally walking along, pick up the phone and point and shoot. And the edit was pretty much the same, just a cheeky vignette. And that was about it, really. Bit of contrast. But I think the colours were all there for me. Didn't really have to do much work.
It certainly got the votes. I like the lady on the left with the crossed legs. I think that's really interesting. Yeah. Cool. Ian, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it just proves that you don't need to have the latest phone and what you can achieve. And I guess you shot that as a JPEG as well, so you don't need a stupid amounts of processing as well. So no, it's a really good shot.
Charlie?
Sorry, I wasn't listening.
Joe?
I think it's a lovely shot. And I think a key point is here is what Chris said about point and shoot, and that's what a lot of people can do with their mobiles, which is great, which is why we can encourage more people to get into photography and start with phones.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Okay, well, perhaps Charlie will wake up when we head to the Photo of the Month winner for April, which is a lovely picture of a cat looking at its own reflection, kind of. It's called Cat Reflection by Ian Watson, and he took this with a Google Pixel 10 Pro. So around the panel once again, Chris?
As the cat hater, I actually really like this. This was my pick as well.
Ah.
Believe it or not. So yeah, definitely the best one of the bunch for me. I really like the depth of field. I don't know whether he's done a lot of editing. Looks like there's a vignette there. I really like the shadow fall off on the left, and there's a complementary color grade. You've got blue and orange with the ears of the cat and the chin on the reflection. It's just a really pleasing image. I'm not sure, you know, whether it's everything was intended to be like that, but that's how it's come out. And yeah, thumbs up.
Very nice, Ian.
Yeah, I voted for it as well, but I guess you would say, but not being negative, but for a phone photo, it's great. But again, if you were planning something with a camera, you would probably be looking for maybe something more on the reflection. That's all I would say. But from an output from a phone, it's really good.
Joe?
Yeah, I'm going to repeat what I said on PSC, actually. It looks like the cat's deep in reflection as well, thinking about its life and what's outside. So, yeah, double meaning on the reflection. I love this shot. It's brilliant.
Cool. Charlie, are you awake?
Yeah, I think it's really good for a phone photo and for a photo in general. I also like the reflection. You can kind of see almost like a third eye of the cat between its two main eyes in the reflection, which I think is good. Mm-hmm. It's a good photo, and it's really sharp as well, the image.
Mm. Well done. So thanks, gentlemen. Ian Watson took that with a Pixel 10 Pro, and that will go forward to the Photo of the Year competition, taking him the fourth place for April. And we'll be back here with the May one at some point in the coming week. So watch out for that one. One matter to chuck at the panel for an opinion was about Ahmed's picture. Actually, I was quite surprised that Ahmed's picture didn't win it, to be honest. He took a photograph of his iris, and it was quite phenomenally detailed and close and macro-ish. Anyway, the point was that he took this photograph with an old Nokia phone and then stuck the resulting image into his new Samsung phone and then edited it in there. And the question that came up was, is that okay? The rules of the group are it's got to all be done on a phone. Those are the rules at the moment. It should all be done on the phone, processed on the phone. Is it okay if it's actually the job is split between two phones? Let's start with Ian.
I'll be happy to edit it on whatever. So yeah, no challenges from that perspective. I think, as long as it's shot on a phone, to me it doesn't really matter what you edit it on. But
okay, so perhaps Charlie.
Yeah, perfectly fine. I mean, you know, phones are like computers these days. So whether it's edited on a phone or a computer, it's all the same to me.
Joe.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. I mean, I'd even say I'd happily see people edit on a tablet, even a laptop, even, I'd say. I know there's the argument that's stronger software, but yeah, I'm happy to see it edited on it. As long as they state what they've edited on, it's fine for me.
At this rate, PSC Photos will be open to cameras and all sorts of other stuff as well soon. Chris, last word for you.
Yeah, no surprises. I know we've gone back and forth for years on this, haven't we, Ted? But no problem. Edit on a laptop, you know, phone, tablet, whatever. It's all the same. Lightroom's the same on every device now as well. So,
okay, so perhaps we should make that formal then, and just say in that group, it's okay. Anything goes. Edit it where you like, and let's move forward. Okay, thanks very much for that. And we'll get to the theme. Charlie, you chose the theme, which is friction and obstacles to photography and something else. Oh, I've missed that out. what is it? Constraints. Friction, constraints and obstacles to photography. So do you want to lead us into that and give us your thoughts?
Well, I think I'm kind of a sufferer, really, of this. I mean, I want to take pictures all the time, and I always find there's a lot of friction, not only with my gear, but also the environment, the setting, and really to, you know, just get off my ass and go out with my camera and take photos. I always find it difficult, which sounds strange to say, because obviously we all have mobile phones. But a mobile phone doesn't always cut it for me, I think, when taking photos. So the theme today is obviously constraints, friction, and obstacles. So I think we need to ask ourselves, what do these words mean? Friction, what does that mean in the context of photography? Well, I think it's anything that basically takes away your motivation to actually go out the door and take photos. It could be something as simple as, you know, charging the batteries for your camera, to just having like paralysis over what lens you want to use. Anything like that can be friction. Even from what, you know, metering mode you want to use, anything that, you know, makes a simple process more complicated, I would say is friction. Then you've got constraints. Well, what do I mean by that? So a constraint is like another form of friction, but it's like inverted friction. It's a friction you put on yourself so you can go out there with one goal, to take a photo. In this case, it could be just shooting with like a prime lens, like a 50 millimeter lens. And you say for yourself, okay, I'm only going to use this lens for a day or a week or a year, but we'll get into that, you know, later down the line in the conversation. And then finally, obstacles. What do I mean when I say obstacles? Well, I think there's four main obstacles, really. The first one is obviously environment. Within the environment, you have like people. Sometimes it's difficult when you put a camera to someone's face if you're doing street photography or with a flash. If you're in a hot country, mosquitoes, you know, you have to wear many layers of clothing, and that makes you extra hot when you've got camera gear. So that's environment. That's an obstacle. Thin gear, as I've mentioned, that can cause paralysis. Also, another interesting one here, which you could probably lump in with environment, is terrain. So when I went to Hong Kong, in my naivety, I think it would be, you know, really easy. I thought, oh, it's only 14 degrees. It'd be nice and cool. And I could walk around. I won't have to worry about the heat. But of course, I didn't factor in the hills. It's a very hilly terrain. And it was a nightmare on my knees. In the end, I just went out with one camera and one lens, which was good. I did well. So it was kind of like a obstacle coupled with constraints. The terrain is very important, especially if you're going to a hilly area, Chongqing, Hong Kong. Very difficult to do photography with many lenses. I wouldn't recommend it. And finally, obviously, obstacle is climate. Heat can be a massive role. It could be a big hindrance. And also rain as well. I actually like rainy photography, but sometimes that's difficult and you have to, you know, suit up with like a proper jacket and put a bag over your camera and look ridiculous in the rain with your, you know, a shopping bag over your camera, which I've done a few times. So those are the obstacles. And constraints, obviously going out there and limiting how you're going to shoot. So I've created this graph, and hopefully other people here can chip in, which you'll see on the album, which is what I call the creative feedback loop. And I used Chris, my friend here, in the in the podcast, as kind of like a model, really. We can
guinea pig this,
yeah, this framework around him. Chris in Morocco, yeah, so he's a framework that it's built on, because I went to Morocco a few months back with Chris. And he had the ingenious idea of just going with one lens, which I did, but I took a zoom. He went with the 35 millimeter. So this is an 8-step process. It's creative feedback loop. It's essentially a heuristic device, just so you can better understand the workflow of how to think in terms of obstacles and using it to your advantage. So he went with one lens, the 35 millimeter lens, that then forced him to focus on certain things, because you can only capture certain things with a 35mm lens, but it's a very versatile lens. Obviously, you can do environmental, you can do street, you can do many different things with a 35. And then you can see here, step three, that really forced him to focus in, to hone his skills in on observation. You know, so he took one fantastic photo of a street vendor pushing a cart. Obviously, there was more to it than that. He had like dynamic light and stuff, and it was really good. And I think he did minimal editing. I think he can probably tell us about this, but I think he just did masking, a bit of editing on that, minimal editing on that photo. And I thought it was really good because he was shooting early in the morning. And then I just, you know, put here for observation, different things that you would find in the environment in Morocco, a cat in an alley or whatever, you know, different things you're forced to focus on because the constraint is the 35 millimeter lens. And then as you're doing that, you're accumulating more and more images. And then that finally creates like a reflection, a feedback process where you're posting the images on Behance or Instagram, Reddit, Vero. And that's really kind of feeding the images in your head of what constitutes a good photo. This goes into pattern recognition, which is hugely important for myself, I think, because I see myself as a bad photographer. So I basically use patterns to identify what people would say is a good photo. I cheat, basically. I just copy other people's work. And that seems to work for me because in doing that, I create my own photos. So you have the pattern recognition, which really builds up your kind of identity of who you are as a photographer. That sounds a little bit bullshitty, but you know, I think we all do build an identity when we are out there taking photos. And then finally, this leads to the final point, number 8, which is the new constraint. So instead of using the 35 millimeter lens, you're going to say, okay, now I'm only going to shoot the color orange, or I'm only going to shoot subjects wearing white or shadows, or I'm only going to shoot, you know, men wearing ties or women and men wearing ties. And then you can couple that with the 35 millimeter lens, you know, if you're crazy, you know, you can just have like one constraint, or you can marry constraints together. And it's just like this idea of breaking out of this rut, breaking out of this this cycle of friction and obstacles. And I think this is a good process, you know, to do that. What are your thoughts?
Well, who's going to go first? Chris?
Okay, well, as it's my name in the middle of this loop, I guess.
You have to go.
I have to go. as the Morocco example, it was a constraint forced upon me by Ryanair or EasyJet. I can't remember which one it was. But I basically just had a children's backpack to take with me to keep the holiday within budget. I just went for one lens. And I did find it enjoyable, and I did find it creatively fulfilling that you had this sort of, for me, a big constraint. I only have Zooms. I had to borrow Charlie's Prime.
So you have Ryanair to thank, not Ryanair, EasyJet to thank.
EasyJet, yeah. So, yeah, and there's definitely some benefit to it. I got that one image, you know, which made the trip worthwhile. And There's an argument to be had that I might not have got that image, or it might have been a very different image if I had, like, my bag of Zooms on me. It probably would have been a much wider shot, and maybe not as interesting.
Focal length.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's definitely advantages to it. But I don't have your analytical mind, Charlie, so
You can't end right there on the first step. There's 8 steps.
No, I'm with you until I think I'm following you along, and it kind of makes sense until we get to number 5, and that's where it kind of ends for me. And then I don't really do... This is where the analytical side of it comes in for you, and I don't think I do all this, or not consciously anyway. And I've never sort of gone in for this only shoot orange things. I feel like that's something that people tell you to do when you're kind of fed up and you're trying to force yourself to take pictures, which I haven't really had that issue.
I have a list of creative constraints. It came up to about 50, but I've narrowed it down. So there's about 20.
You narrowed it down to maybe 3.
3. Well, yeah. I mean, you can do it from a technical standpoint, okay? So creative constraints. You can say, okay, I'm only going to shoot open wide, you know, f1.4. Right. You know, you can use any lens you want, any camera you want, shoot whatever you want, but you're shooting open wide. So That would be a bit weird for me because I usually do that, obviously, at night. So that kind of creates opportunities to get some unusual photos, I guess, if you're shooting wide. You can also shoot, you know, F8, which is great the majority of the time. I think most of us would agree. But again, that would also have some constraints. So I'd really have to think outside the box shooting that way. If you were to go outside of shooting technically, you could, you know, shoot with no editing. You say, okay, I'm going to shoot and just shoot raw unedited, or you might as well just shoot JPEG.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, there's no editing, maybe it's probably too much for me, but just shooting JPEG, maybe with a profile applied to
like
your camera.
Like a
Fuji film sim or a black and white color, then for sure. But, you know, if you're shooting raw, they're meant to be edited. They're deliberately kind of flat with the intention to edit them. So you would need some kind of preset on it, I think.
I think
What's interesting here is we're talking about forced constraints and ones that are planned constraints as well. There's two different types of constraints here. Like the 35mm constraint was actually forced by Ryanair.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you've got different types of constraints as well. I struggle with friction.
Ryanair would never sort of tell me you can't edit your photos. I mean, that's the...
No. Well, if they did, you would tell them where to go, but...
I would. I'd say, oi.
You mean Joe, as opposed to constraining yourself for the exercise of artistic attainment. So you say, exactly. Right, today I'm only going to shoot with my lens wide open, for example.
Exactly that, yeah. So that's a different type of constraint, which is what it's interesting, Charlie, with this route that you've got here, this cycle. Like, you've started off a constraint which is actually forced, and then you're planning constraints, which is quite interesting. Which maybe that exercise, because you're forced to do that, you think, do you know what? I might do that next time. I might put some constraints because it gave me focus, as you can see in number two. Which is a good thing in photography, isn't it? To have some focus, planning your shots with the 35mm only. So constraints can be a good thing.
It can be, but I think it's important to look at the wider picture. Mm. It's kind of like a false narrative I'm putting on you here, because if you apply this to me in Hong Kong, yeah, fantastic. I'm going to get some banging photos using this constraint of a 35mm or only shooting orange or whatever. But if you did it in, I don't know, the city of Hastings or Brighton, you know, I'm going to get limited output. I'm not going to get so many photos. So although it can help you creatively, as a numbers game, it is still location dependent. It's a fact that I'm going to get better photos in Bangkok or Hong Kong versus Hastings. You know, it's just a fact. So constraints can help you, but you still need to, and maybe I'm biased, you still need to get on a plane and go to an exotic location to get cool photos. That's what I'm saying.
This is where the friction comes in. You've got to make that time to do that, haven't you? You've got to have some belief in yourself as a photographer as well. Like, that's something I struggle with, because if you really want to go out and you believe you're going to go out and get good photos, you do it. But if you have the mindset, like I often do, is, do I want to waste my time? I can go out for a few hours. I'm probably not going to get a good shot. The friction part is my issue more than anything. Constraints for me, I think, will be a good thing, because I'm still learning quite a lot. So having constraints can teach me new things. But it depends where you are and where your mentality is as well.
Yeah. I think also you can take a more logical approach, which is kind of pointless in this kind of pursuit, because it's obviously, you know, photography is meant to be an art. But you could say, okay, well, opportunity cost. Yes, I can go out, wander around the streets of Brighton for 3 hours with my camera, and I might get a good photo. Or I could stay at home and look at images on Instagram, download them, draw over them on my iPad to better understand the context of the subject and the photo and the composition. It sounds sad, but I do this every time before I go abroad, because it helps hone my vision on what I'm going to shoot. Now, not everyone, I can guarantee you that Chris doesn't do this, but this is what I do, and it just kind of helps me formulate in my mind's eye what I'm going to take a photo of, as ridiculous as that sounds. So there is that opportunity cost element, going out for 3 hours, getting one or zero photos, versus just staying at home, putting in the work, and then when you go abroad, like I do, then you're going to get some good photos. So it's just being, it's being constructive with your time. You know, if you're measuring it hour per hour, there's only so many hours I can go to London, and I'm not always guaranteed good photos, versus just staying at home and studying photos.
Yeah. Ian, are you keeping up?
Yeah, absolutely.
He's falling asleep.
No, I get it. I'm probably more on the constraints of. The biggest constraint is getting the time to go out, and also the commitment that if you're going to go and shoot something, it's planning things like the light or tide times and things like that. So you're getting all of those things in place. For me personally, putting constraints in my photography would be painful. I go all the way to Hong Kong and I'm taking one lens and I can shoot one cup. That's not for me. I'm not going to put all that effort in to go and shoot and then put constraints to potentially miss a photo or something just to be creative. Again, that's my perspective. But I think it is that element that Joe mentioned is getting that time and planning to do something. And it's... To me, it's all down to intention, is that you intention to visualize what you would like to get, the sort of area, the sort of the light, planning the time of day and actually getting it. Because back to the age old saying that the more you do it, the luckier you get, because you go to London and... on a one-off, you might not get that photo. But again, if you're planning it and you put so much work into it, you've got a lot more chance of getting the shot that you're looking to get. So,
Ian, you're quite often constrained by event, location, because thinking of your Formula One stuff, I mean, that's where it is. You're constrained. You've got to go there, and that's the event. That's where you are.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're constrained by time and shooting something live, but also the constraint of what you actually have to produce. So I think that takes a lot of the creative work that Charlie has been talking about, is that if you're doing this for a job and you're doing this for an assignment and you need to generate 100 images, you're 100% focused on getting those images, and nothing else gets in the way. You may have some time to try and get a couple of creative-y shots, but most of the time you're constrained on laser-focused, I need to produce this and this, and I need to get it up to the editor to be put online. So that does take a lot of the fun out of it, of being in an epic location and shooting something like Formula One. It's probably only until afterwards you look back and say, wow, that was a great experience. But when you're actually shooting it, you're not sort of living it, which I, from my understanding, it's more of a Charlie thing, is really living that moment to get that shot and taking your time, whereas mine is very instant.
Okay.
I just want to talk about the feedback and reflection part. I think this is very important, especially when you're learning, but even as a photographer that's more experienced, it's good to get feedback and reflect on your images. But this can also cause friction if you get negative feedback, of course, and if you're not open to negative feedback, which is important. Again, you need to be open to this type of thing if you want to improve. Feedback's a gift, as they say. But yeah, it can cause friction, and then it stops that loop, stops you wanting to go out again and take pictures.
One of the
I think I'd agree. Yes. I was going to say that AI, I think, has magnified perfection on social media these days. So when people are going online to post their images, I see this all the time. I think, oh, I've got such a great, fantastic image. And then there's someone else with something that looks just 10 times better. And it's quite hard, I think, to compete with that. You know, now everything is so perfect, so good online, that when you do go out to shoot, you just feel like, what's the point? You know, you could just make it at home on a computer, like a fake image or something, when you can, the barrier to entry, even though anyone could take a photo, to take a good photo, the barrier is quite high, and you can just cheat by using AI if you were wanting to do that.
But I also think that I'm 100% with you on the feedback loop. To be able to get constructive feedback, as Joe said, is a gift. But there's also pleasure of actually going out and shooting and enjoying taking photographs. Even if you're not getting a great photo, you've gone out, you've been in that situation in London or something like that, and you've had the pleasure of trying to take shots, even if you don't get the end product. For me, that's also part and parcel of the enjoyment of having it as a hobby.
Would you say, Ian, it's more a case of reps in the game? That just the more you go out and shoot, basically, the better photos you get. I mean, I know it sounds simple to say, but I think that could be the case, really, just going out there more and more. Even if your photos are, let's say you're a beginner, just the more you do it, the better you're going to get. But I wouldn't agree with that. I think the environment plays a big role. You need to be in the right setting, I think, to take good photos.
But you get that experience. I also think that, yes, the more you do it, back to this Gary Player thing where he's taking that shot and the guy said, oh, you're so lucky. And he said, well, the more I practice, the luckier I get. And I think the more you're in that position, you will get those shots. But I think there's also a really other piece is shooting with other people and seeing what other, because we see things in a certain way that maybe we're a little bit tunnel visioned, and you see other people shooting or shooting something else. It's a bit like going to the Formula One and you can see where all the photographers are and you're standing at something completely somewhere else on your own. You know you're in the wrong place. So it's those things as well. If you can go out and shoot with other people, I think you get a different perspective.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think, as you say, the more I practice, the better I get. I mean, you're essentially creating your own serendipity, aren't you? When you go out and shoot, you're creating your own luck the more you do it.
Yeah,
I think this is pattern recognition you're talking about here as well. Like the people are standing in that particular place. Why are they standing there? Thinking about that. I think the pattern recognition goes hand in hand with the feedback and reflection as well. And this could be the type of feedback you're getting from certain groups of people, because let's face it, it's an art form, right? Certain photography is not going to appeal to everyone. Let's take Ian's photography of F1. Not everyone's going to like it. They might look at it, it'd be an outstanding photo, but it's of a Formula One car, and they're like, oh, I'm not interested. So it's finding who's going to be interested in your photography as well, and getting it out to the right people.
Yeah, I think there's certain genres that people tap into, isn't there? Obviously, there's going to be some genres that are very, very popular. There are some genres that people are just going to buy into quite literally, like wedding photography. Although I don't know how many people would actually go on Instagram and look up wedding photos unless they were going to do their own wedding.
There's a lot on there, surprisingly.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, because it's really artistic now what wedding photographers do now. It's not traditional shots that you see. And I actually love looking at them, what they create. It's really, really good stuff.
Really difficult, I think, wedding photography, because obviously the bride in the white dress, the white is going to mess up your photo. It has to, you know, the editing, it has to be perfect to get the white balance so everything looks correct.
Well, you've got a constraint there, haven't you, straight away?
Technically, it has to be correct because of the white, so that's going to be difficult to shoot.
Because I see wedding photographers often treat it like a bit like street, if you like, the way they do some of their shots.
That's interesting.
Yeah, you should definitely check it out on Insta. The wedding photography is really fun now when you see it.
I was just thinking about pattern recognition, and you know, there's this whole talk now with Ray-Ban glasses, Meta glasses, and all of that. Do you think there'd be a market for augmented reality pattern recognition photography glasses? So you put them on when you go out to shoot.
Shows you a good composition when you turn
your head. Yeah, basically, it does all the hard work for you, and it's constantly doing it in real time with lines and lasers and
there's a sense in which phones do that already, isn't there, Joe? With some clever composition stuff, you can turn some phones on and say, "Here, flick a switch," and it'll sort out the best shot for you, won't it?
Yeah, I mean, in the basic terms, you've even got the rules of thirds and things like that, and you can have the grid on your screen, can't you? In basic terms, but yeah, even now, there's lots of features now. I think Pixel's got a load of stuff, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they're all. It's all coming through to all cameras. All phones. I'm not sure about cameras. Is this what we just said true of cameras these days, or are they keeping away from that?
There seems to be keeping
the UI on cameras is terrible, really. When it comes to phones, they've got much more sophisticated user interfaces. They're much more intuitive to use.
Mm-hmm.
I think everyone would agree that if you have a Sony camera, the software is just abysmal. It really is.
I think where we're seeing more consumer sort of cameras now, you might see that type of thing coming feeding in. But yeah, who knows?
We had that a few years ago, didn't we? Remember the Galaxy camera that came out, which was basically a camera which had Android screen on the back.
And that was great.
Yeah, I'd love that to come back again, because I'm with Charlie that I think the interface on every single camera is atrocious. Yeah. And I don't know if they're all in league together that they have to do it, because to create that barrier of entry for people to be able to use cameras, they need to get over that obstacle.
Yeah, I think the phone UI is just superior in every way. I just want my Samsung phone UI on my Sony full-frame camera. That's all I want. I'd be so happy if that can happen. It's just so clunky. Well, okay, my camera is obviously set up to how I want it, and it's almost set and forget once I know where everything is. But when you have a new camera and you have to set it up, a new Sony camera, it's such a pain. And I'm sure it's similar for Nikon or for Canon. Maybe not Canon, but the Sony interface is just really bad. And as you were saying, Ian, with the Samsung camera, it was just more intuitive back then.
But it never took off for some reason. I don't know why, but again, it seems logical, but maybe with DJI maybe coming into the market and things like that things may change at some stage.
I think it was before its time. It was just too early, wasn't it? Yeah.
So, did it take a SIM card?
There's an inertia, isn't there, with these legacy camera brands that no one wants to go first. You know, no one wants to be the one that upsets their bird watchers, you know, the 60-year-olds that gather around the corner at parts cameras. So we need DJI, they're my last hope, to come in, and they need to have something that sets them apart from all the others if they come out with a full-frame camera. It's going to be a tough sell to get anyone to go to them, you know, changing system, changing lenses. So they need to come in. They need to come in with a whole new modern UI, and I think they will.
Well, they're part of the L-Mount Alliance, aren't they? So you can use...
Oh, they'll get the lenses straight off the bat. That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. So, but, you know, they're still going to have the issue of sort of converting people and onto their system, and they're going to have a differentiator, and hopefully it's going to be pushing the whole industry forward.
I guess they'll try and target some of the content creators that already use their, like, action cams and stuff like that.
I think they'll have to, yeah.
Yeah.
But once they do it, and if they do well, then they'll all do it, won't they?
Yeah, they'll follow suit. Yeah.
Chris, didn't DJI invent their own market for gimbal cameras? The Pocket 3, wasn't it? There was nothing else similar, was there?
Not that I know of. And the DJI Pocket 3 has totally dominated the market.
It's its own product category. That's what I'm trying to
say. I'm considering one for B-roll and stuff like that, because as much as my full-frame camera's great, when I go to some of these events, having something small that goes in your pocket like that, that can shoot 4K, and it's brilliant.
Yeah, 1-inch sensor in there.
It's decent enough.
Does everything you need to. Yeah, for sure. I really hope they do come into market on full frame and do something.
That'd be amazing. Because,
we're kind of just treading water, I think. We'll talk about the Sony soon in the news, but we're kind of just scraping the barrel of iteration at this point, I think.
So, Charlie, back to your notes, and a cycle of intentional practice and continuous evolution. Was there more we needed to say about this?
No, I mean, it's quite straightforward. It looks more complex than it is, but it's just a cycle, Ted. That's all it is. It's just really going from one process to the next in order to iterate your image taking abilities. That's what it is. And constraints, I think, are the best way to kind of get out of a rut if you're struggling. And all I would add to that is I noticed I don't play video games, but there is a comparison there. I think if you're trying to create constraints to take more photos, there's an interesting crossover with gaming. You're essentially trying to gamify photography, aren't you, by adding constraints. If you look at video games, you know, they have objectives, rules, progression systems. These are all things that photography lacks. So I think by integrating these gaming concepts into not just street photography, but any form of photography, you can really get out of, you know, what I suffer with, which is aimlessness in my photography, repetition of taking the same thing in photography. I was taking for many years street photography, and I was getting a bit bored of it, overthinking of the photographic process, and gear obsession. And, you know, I'm guilty of that as well. So I think taking gaming rules and applying it to real world photo shooting can really get you out of the situation where you have friction and obstacles.
Certainly, that made me think of what Chris had said quite recently about repetition. He was talking about his photographs of the beach, and he was saying, like, well, there's nothing else to, unless I go to Morocco or something, it's going to be the same as I've done before. Chris, you, am I quoting you properly there?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, if you don't go away every week, which obviously I don't, then you're kind of stuck with what's in front of you to a large degree. And yeah, so I do just go down and take the same old photo of the pier. You know, maybe the light will be different, the tide will be different. But I still enjoy it, and I still get images that in isolation I'd be really happy with. But because you've sort of done them 100 times before, they don't wow me like they used to. But the process of getting down there, and hopefully we can do a show on long exposures at some point. You know, I just find it really enjoyable and rewarding.
Sure. Cool.
I just wanted to quickly ask, what would you guys say is the bigger issue? Friction, constraints, or what was the other one? Obstacles. For me, I would say it's definitely friction is the biggest problem, because that can actually stop you going out and taking pictures. What's your opinions?
For me, it's the definitions are what I think they are. I think obstacles, you know, location, opportunity. You know, if I was going to a different country every week, I'd be out taking photos, you know, every week, and enthusiastically so. But when you're sort of at home, yeah, I think that's the big issue for me is location and opportunity.
Ian? That's interesting, because I think there's some friction there as well, but we'll get into that in a bit. Go on, Ian.
Yeah, I think it's sometimes all in your head that there is always something you can shoot or something you can do to do that. I know, as say, being in the same location is a friction, but I think the planning and putting that effort in, I think sometimes is is the challenge for me, because do you plan it, be ready to get up at a silly o'clock, 3:30 to get to a sunrise or something like that? It takes a lot of effort into your day-to-day week and stuff. So that's probably the biggest obstacle for me.
I think the when I used to take photographs a lot, the biggest obstacle I imposed or I convinced myself was the obstacle, was not having any money to get the gear I wanted. And I know that you touched on gear earlier on, Charlie, in your list. But for me, that was the big one. I convinced myself that I couldn't afford to get the stuff that I wanted. And to some degree, I still do, because I'm quoted on this show as saying, if only I had pots of money, I would have the best gear, and it would rekindle my interest in cameras and photography. But, you know, to some degree, that's probably an excuse. But in the old days, I would certainly go out with a TLR or something, and one lens, which was usually fixed on a TLR, and say, right, today I'm going to do this square format and I'm going to enjoy it, and I don't take anything else out with me. So I think my point is that obstacles are largely self, not largely, but partially self-imposed because of attitudes. Charlie?
Yeah, I think I agree with all of that, really. For me, obstacles are really, I guess it's more friction, actually. Lens choice, I suffer from that all the time. I'm always debating whether to take the 85 or the 35. And it's silly, really, because I have a phone in my pocket which doubles as a second lens. And I've tried to break away from that process of always thinking about what lens to take and just take one lens, mostly because of the weight if I'm without a car, and just my phone, and just, you know, do it that way. But then if you take a tripod, that's when it starts getting difficult, because I do plan my shoots and sometimes the lens I have isn't wide enough or whatever, and I have to take a second lens, and that's when the friction builds up. So, yeah, I think you do need to be selective in your choice of weapon, so to speak.
Cool. Okay. Thanks very much, everyone. Interesting discussion. And let's move on. Before we leap into review of the kind of the brief stuff that people have been going on, have been doing in the last fortnight, I just wanted to highlight a couple of photographs in the album. And also, Chad Dixon has been putting some videos in there as well. Now, if you I'm looking at this on a desktop computer. If I run my mouse over the videos, you can see them rolling, and he's obviously having some fun, not only creating videos but also putting music to it and making it all happen. And some of that is really creative and interesting ideas that he's got going on. He's also posted a picture of some shadows, which if you click on it, you can see that the shadows are on the ground, which was paved in grey brick, and I just flipped the photo 90% clockwise before cropping, and he took that with a Samsung Galaxy S25 FE. So that was an interesting, almost optical illusion kind of photo, and very interesting what he's done with that. I think the few in there that Chad's done. Any thoughts on that? The videos or his shadows photograph?
I really like Chad's shadow one on the wall. I think that's great. It looks like a book cover. It looks like someone's paid him to go out and actually shoot something specifically for a certain book. I think it's really good.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. Anyone else?
That was the one that stood out to me. It's probably my favourite image in the whole album today, to be honest. I always forget to try things like that, to flip the image, because I just assumed it was against the wall, not the ground. And yeah. Oh, yeah, it makes sense when you see it, when you find out it was the floor. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of encouraged me to try and do things like that myself a bit more as well.
Cool. Joe, any thoughts on the videos particularly? You're a video man.
Well, it's a bit different to the videos I do, but yeah, it's cool. Cause I like the slow motion. It's cool that phones can do that so easily. Very colourful. It's very Samsung-esque, isn't it? but maybe it's just colourful scene anyway. But yeah, it's really cool.
Very creative, yeah, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, both things he's posted, the video and the image, both very creative and shows Chad's creative side.
Yeah. Ian?
Yeah, I like the black and white one. I think previously said, it's interesting. And flipping it, I think is good. I think it might work as maybe as a portrait or something, like 5x7 or something like that would be quite interesting. Back to the sort of the book cover thing, but yeah, I like that.
Cool. Okay, and we got four pictures in there from Ed House, who couldn't join us today, and they are tending towards being insects and flowers and stuff like that, which he's taken with various bits of equipment. One of the dragonfly, or rather the mayfly, was taken with a GX7. The willow flea was taken with a Olympus EM10. I can't see the lens on that. I'm not sure what lens was taken that was attached to the device there. And also the crane fly on the flower. Again, Olympus Gyrus, he is there. And the first one, which is the Golden Star of Bethlehem, that's another Olympus one. I think he's using his 30mm macro lens, isn't he?
Yes.
For these ones. So certainly the willow flea is incredibly detailed. Any thoughts, anyone, on Ed's four pictures?
Shall I go? Yeah, yep. I'll go. I really like the garden star image, just the flower. I just love the dark and light. He's obviously caught his eye as well. Because even in the leaf in the foreground, you can see the shadow of the flower, it looks like, on that leaf. It's a really interesting image. Mm-hmm. I really like it.
Cool. Okay, thanks very much for those people that have dumped some photographs into the album. That's really helpful. Let's get back to the catch-up then, our last 2 weeks in photography. Chris, you've been constrained and have not been able to get out, I think.
Yeah, work's been mental for me the last few weeks, and it will continue to be until I go away. I go away 2 weeks tomorrow. To Thailand for 6 weeks, so my thoughts are sort of photography wise are just sort of focused on that at the moment. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking, I enjoyed that 35mm prime I had in Morocco. Do I get one for Thailand? That's my main sort of quandary at the moment, so
yeah,
I'm not sure whether that's a community
yes,
problem to
buy
have
one.
I say yes, yeah,
yeah.
No brainer.
You need it.
Just buy it.
I know. But my bag's heavy enough.
Okay.
But yeah, we'll see. But
who are you going on.
Who am I flying with?
Yeah.
Eva Air, Taiwan's.
Oh, no, I mean, you're on your own, or?
Oh, sorry, mate. Yeah, I'm going with my wife.
I'll stick it in her bag.
Yeah, I might have to smuggle a couple in there as it is. But...
Okay. And someone else has written there, no photos taken. Is that you, Charlie?
That was me, yeah. I haven't been too busy at work. I haven't managed to take any photos this past 2 weeks.
Okay, no problem. Ian, you have made up for everyone else and have put quite a lot in. Do you want to lead us through what you've been doing?
Yeah, I went to, when my leg was working, I went to Snetterson just to have a practice, really. It was to try and do some whip pans where you sort of flick up at the end of the panning and try to get some really slow shutter speed stuff down to sort of an eighth of a second and stuff like that to try and have a play around. Again, nothing fantastic. Again, it's the location, everything, but it was interesting. But also trying some different zooming in as you're panning. There was one shot in the group that is not brilliant. There's a picture of Carbon Ian on it, which is obviously cool. But I did a zoomed in as I was panning and shooting it, which had a interesting effect. It was just really to have a play with different shooting techniques. So I was quite interested on that. With everything else is sort of zoomed in and blurred, sort of thing that you can maybe create in Photoshop, but did it out of the camera. But yeah, did that again, some slow pans and things like that. Again, it was really there just to practice, back to the Charlie comments of being there, spending a morning, lots of cars going round, and having the ability to test things when normally I wouldn't be able to do that if I was at a proper race weekend. I also did an evening of lighting testing. So the camera cover belonged to have some stage lights, and also they had some set up for some still life. So it was really interesting trying to get cameras set up for lighting, for portraits and still life as well. So that was a good sort of evening of learning.
I love that photograph of the jar. It's really simple, still life, but the reflections and the colour behind and the lighting, it just all works beautifully for me. Really impressed with that.
Yeah, I mean, it was something and nothing, but this was a vase that had a halo light behind it. So it had a red board, and then the flash was behind the board to get the halo on the outside. And then there was a flash to the right as well. But again, it was more around practicing, which was cool. And it was with sort of a group of sort of 15, 20 like-minded people with their cameras, playing by learning and things like that. So it was good, but again, nothing of any note, but as I say, I enjoyed doing it. And then the final thing is there's a panels competition next week, so I put some panels together. So one that will be printed, which I called Only the Brave, which is the Southall Pier thing of the clothes on the side, the people going swimming, and then on the beach huts, the clothes. So ideally, these triptych images are supposed to create one image out of three. So I'll print that one, and then I put together the three images from Shanghai into a triptych as well. So I think it works. I think on this one, I probably put the borders a little bit tight. But for the one I submitted, I had sort of 15 mil borders. So the images are a bit smaller, but there's a bit more breathing room around the frame on that.
Go on, Joe.
I was going to say, I just think they're both wonderful. I can imagine them being canvases in different rooms in houses. Like the Shanghai one, I wouldn't mind that in my studio. I say studio, it's my kids' playroom, but I can make it more manly with these images.
It sounds good as a studio anyway.
Yeah, the little corner I sit in is my studio. Yeah, I can imagine them being on the wall. They look really cool. Love it.
Very good. And
the middle one out of that is off the Magic 8 Pro, so
yeah,
it is
a
phone camera, it's a phone picture as well. So
really, the Magic 8 Pro, that's really good.
Yeah, it's cool, and just using the same preset across the images, so there is a sort of a little bit of a very bluey consistent tinge across them, so I was quite happy with that. So yeah, that's what I've been doing, put those together. Yeah,
very nice.
Be wasting lots of ink tomorrow to print the south wall one off, so printing that off and mounting it to put it in next week. The other good news is I sold my Z6. I absolutely hated every moment of having it. And now I'm back to two Z8s and a broken phone that I was going to be using as a street photography camera. But hey. And then the last thing to note, I constantly use the reflect lens filter. There's one in the folder, which again creates quite a nice black hole effect to images. It brings the color out. I've ordered another one from them, the gold mist filter. I thought that'd be pretty cool for the lights and the colors at Monaco. So I bought that filter, but also a holder for the filter, so I won't have to screw it onto the lens. I could just hold it in front of it, so I don't have to have the friction of having to take it on and off my camera. So I can use, if I'm using the 70 to 200 or the 24-70, I don't have to screw it on. I could just hold it in front of it when I shoot. So they're quite fun to create effects. Yeah. Within the actual camera itself.
Very nice indeed. Okay, last one to you, Joe. You've been out with your Razer, your brand new Razer Fold.
Yeah, I mean, I've got much to say, but obviously I'm testing the cameras a little on this. I think for a foldable device, it's got a really lovely camera system. It's the same camera system as the Signature, which just shows you where phones are. This one I've put in there of a butterfly, it's not an amazing shot, but I think when you consider it's from a phone, it's got some really lovely detail there. The flower's a bit oversaturated for my liking, a bit overexposed in places, but yeah, it's a nice image, I think. I've also just popped a video in there, which is from my actual camera, and I thought that was with my 100mm lens, and it's coming out really well, I think, for product shot, to showcase this tiny AI card. Just thought I'd put a video in there for some videography.
Yeah. So the depth of field is chaotic, isn't it? It's so shallow.
Yeah, that's what I love about it. It's the reason I got this lens for taking product shots. I've been trying to. My videos are a bit pants still, where I need to stabilize the camera a bit better. I really should get a gimbal, whereas that shot's stationary, so that's come out nice. But you'll see in a lot of my videos, I try and get in close, and you can see my shake of my hand on a lot of the shots, and I have to edit some of it out. But I should maybe go a bit wider and then give myself that room to edit in post, perhaps.
Crop into it.
Yeah, but I'm still learning. But yeah, it's good fun. Videography is a bit different for me. It's not. I prefer the photography side, if I'm honest.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good shot of the butterfly. I think it's. I mean, when you zoom in and see the detail and everything, again from a folding phone, it's pretty epic, isn't it? So yeah, what you can achieve.
It is wonderful. It just shows you that no matter if that is your constraint of only having a phone, it shouldn't stop you. Go out and take shots, guys.
mm-hmm. Very good. Okay, let's before we wrap things up, let's head to the news and rumours, if there are any rumours. I don't know that there is. Who's taking the news this time?
I'll quickly jump on. There's no rumours now, but following on from last time's rumours, a Sony A7R6 finally got properly announced officially. So some of the rumours were right, some of them didn't come to fruition, and the things that didn't come to fruition were the ones I really wanted. The rumours were brand new UI, brand new body, both of which we didn't get. So I was really hoping for a new UI, as we mentioned earlier. We need one. Didn't get. What we did get was the 67 megapixel sensor, so slight upgrade over the 61, and a massive boost in speed, 30 frames a second in electronic shutter. The readout speed at 19 milliseconds, which is a massive step up from the 99 of the A7R5, but still four times, I think, slower than Ian Z8 and the Canon R5, so it's not really competing with those, but you do get a lot more resolution. I think both those cameras are 45 megapixels. It's a decent camera, but it's not going to tempt me away from my A7R5, not for the photos I take, and at £4,500 also slightly just a tad out of my budget. alongside that, we got the 100 to 400 fixed aperture f4.5 GM lens. So this is a huge upgrade over to the ancient 10-year-old previous 100-400, which was a variable 4.5 to 5.6. That was not really worthy of a GM badge, I don't think. I had two copies of that lens, wasn't happy with either. But this is a proper pro lens. It's twice the size of the old lens. Also, best part of $4,500. So optically perfect. You know, it's a perfect lens, really. It does exactly what you want it to do, but you've got to pay for it. I think it's 1.3 kilos, top of my head.
That's not too bad.
Not too bad. Yeah, it's definitely not as heavy as it looks.
Yeah, but it's not bad.
It's twice the size of the old one. So,
it's interesting. What's interesting about this is you spoke about the new camera body, which people might be tempted by, but you could have this big boy instead for the same money and keep the body you've got, which I'd say is a better move.
Everyone's going to go for the lens, obviously.
Yeah.
I think you'll get a better... Well, if you've got the old 100-400, you'll see better images. And I don't think people with the A7 R5 are going to be doing sports or action photography with a slow readout, so... But this lens looks amazing, but obviously well out of my price range. But I do think because they've done this lens, they'll do a G version of the lens with a slower aperture and a lot smaller and a lot cheaper, hopefully. So I'm hoping for something like that will come along. But that's it. That's all the news. There was some phone news that someone had posted.
There's a new camera from Lumix, which I've put in there.
Where's that?
Let's not go past that. Lumix celebrating 25 years birthday as well, 25th birthday. New L10. It's a premium compact camera. I know it doesn't appeal to you because it's Micro Four Thirds.
It looks nice.
Yeah, it looks like a very nice camera. Do you know what I do like about this? One feature, I think you'll agree. When you turn to portrait mode, like turn the camera into portrait, the UI turns with it, which not all cameras do, which is quite interesting because I do take a lot of cameras in like portrait mode rather than landscape portrait.
So the UI orientates same,
yes, with it.
With you.
Yeah, which is quite a nice feature.
Okay, so phones do that, don't they, when you take a
portrait?
Right.
Which we discussed about, we want that in our cameras.
Yeah.
Okay. So, our camera does that, but if we need to do the latest firmware update, that's one of the updates. Yeah, I'm not updating mine. Yeah.
it sounds like a nice to have, I'll be honest. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. I mean,
I was going to ask you, Joe, about this Lumix. Do you know, is this the same underneath as the Leica Deluxe 8?
I don't know. I think
it is.
I think
it's the same as the model. It looks LX100.
I think it's very
the same
similar.
As the LX100,
it's very similar.
The LX100 is identical to the Leica Deluxe 8, which me and Charlie have both had a little play with.
It looks identical, Chris.
And it's actually really nice.
I think the sensor's different, though, because it's got the GH7 sensor in there.
Hang on a minute. If you have a look at the back screen, it's got a pull-out flip screen, whereas the Leica Deluxe 8 doesn't have that. It just has a standard screen.
It's
certainly
same
similar. I think the lens is the same, I think you're right. I think the sensor and certain aspects of it is slightly different. This is what I think the S9 should have been more like, with a viewfinder on there. A mechanical shutter. I think it's going to appeal to a lot of people.
At least it's got a viewfinder. Many manufacturers now on the lower end mid-range cameras, they're removing the viewfinders, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. It's got a lot going for it. I think it's a nice...
How much is it?
I think it's 1,400, depending what colour you get, actually.
You can get Sony A7C2, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of them. It's a lighter weight camera. It's one that I can see myself using more. It's not full frame. That's right. No. Yeah. But this is where I need Ed on here to help me out here.
Yeah, no, I don't know, because I'm looking at that price and I'm thinking that's the same price as the Fuji X100 6, and I don't know what I would. Obviously, that's not the biggest sensor.
Same price as A7C II as well, and the same weight.
Yeah,
as
but you got to take into account the lenses. If you're looking at a fixed lens, then
yeah, as much as that's a constraint, it's
fixed lens. It's already game over, isn't it? Let's be real.
But I don't think people are buying this, cross-shopping this with a Sony A7 C2, are they?
I think this
is a 500 gram fixed lens camera, sort of point and shoot.
different customer, isn't it? Yeah, different person. Yeah.
I'd still go back to the S9 and go for that and do without the viewfinder.
Well, I'm excited
frame
to
and
see
under 1,000. It's
I'm excited to see what the S9 II comes out with when that actually comes eventually, because if it's more similar to this, that would be a lovely camera, full frame version of this essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. Moving on.
Yep. One last bit of news.
One article I posted. Sony shows off new AI touched up sample photos taken on the Xperia 1/8, and I don't know if you look at the link. They are terrible. The AI photos are significantly worse than the in-camera photos. They're overexposed. They're blown out in some cases. Highlights are just... it's just all blown out. And I'm amazed that they advertise this. They put this out in their marketing material.
We spoke about this on PSC, Charlie, and it turns out that there's a bit of a backstory to it, really, and it's not terribly clear whether this was some marketing ploy or seeking attention. Joe, what did we conclude, Joe?
I think we concluded that we suspect it's to bring attention, because it has got people talking. Because like Charlie said, in most cases, the AI image is not great. I mean, the only one you could maybe argue is the one with the flower, maybe. But even then, at most points, at a push, yeah. I think, because, I mean, Sony know a thing or two about taking images.
They make sensors, don't they?
Exactly, yeah. So it's a weird one. I think it probably is to
look at the one with the cross off. Publicity. I mean, look at that. Disastrous.
It's awful, yeah. It's really, really, really poor. And I think they must have known that. I just can't believe they wouldn't have. I don't know, unless it's like the intern has come in and done it.
There's only one thing worse than being talked about, and that's not being talked about. So the tech press seemed to be thinking that it was a ploy, a purposeful ploy, in order to get people to talk about it, like we are on this show, and bring attention.
Yeah, but we're talking about them for the wrong reasons.
Well, we're still mentioning their new device. Sony Xperia 1 Mark 8.
No one's going to buy, hopefully, after listening to this.
Yeah.
It has a handy feature that you can actually turn off the AI to get realistic photographs.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That's going to be the selling point, isn't it?
I'm sold.
When you look at the original images, they're actually quite nice, though. And you think, oh, is that the capability of the camera? So, yeah, I think it's a talking point. And they've nailed it.
They have. They've nailed it, because we're talking about it. anyway, there you go. Thanks very much, everyone, for joining me today. I think we're about done now. And just a few reminders to say the website is now phoneshowchat.uk, because we've amalgamated things. There's two S's in the middle of that, phoneshowchat.uk. And as I said earlier, we've got the PSC Photography Shared albums for you to click onto and follow along while you've been listening to this. There's also the MeWe group, which is still called PSC Camera Creations. It's all very confusing. I'm so sorry. But just follow your nose and you'll get there. So we'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Ian is going to be missing on that one. Well, he hopes he's going to be missing. If he does make it in his wheelchair away from the UK. But hopefully everyone else will be here. Is that okay?
Yeah.
That'll be the 4th of June, and that'll be show 22, and we'll see you then. So thank you very much again, and see you in the MeWe group. Let us see what you've been taking photographs of in all three of our groups, PSC Photos, PSC Videos, and PSC Camera Creations. We'll catch you again in 2 weeks' time. Bye for now. Bye.